Hi there, I'm Rand Abdel-Fattah from Throughline. If you're listening to this podcast, you know that KQED produces exceptional storytelling that keeps you informed, inspired, and entertained. Their podcasts cover issues from your neighborhood to the entire country and everything in between. Support this work today.
You can help us continue to bring quality podcasts to your ears. Just head to donate.kqed.org/podcast. That's donate.kqed.org/podcast.
From KQED.
Hey everyone, I'm Olivia Allen Price, and this is Bay Curious. Should you find yourself driving on Interstate 280 just south of the Sand Hill Road exit near Stanford, there is this overpass that crosses over a long, skinny building. And when I say long, I do mean long. At nearly 2 miles, it's one of the longest buildings on the planet. Eric Nelson of Petaluma has wondered about it for years.
What's that huge, long building on the side of 280 that I drive by all the time, but really have no idea what it is?
Turns out drivers crossing over that long, skinny building are mere meters away from one of the most advanced technology labs in the world, a place where scientists are exploring how the universe works at the biggest and smallest levels. Inside the lab, particles travel at speeds that would put any hot rod to shame. I'm talking 669 million miles per hour. That's just shy of the speed of light. We called up Stanford to ask what's up with this thing, and they said, come on over, we give tours. So today on the show, we're heading inside the SLAC National Accelerator Laboratory in Menlo Park. SLAC used to stand for the Stanford Linear Accelerator Center, but now it's just SLAC, not an acronym. Get ready to have your mind a little bit blown, or a lot of bit blown, if you zoned out during high school physics class like I did. That's all just ahead on Bay Curious. I'm Olivia Allen Price.
Support for Bay Curious comes from Sierra Nevada Brewing Company. Committed to brewing things the right way since 1980, because when you're a family-run brewery, there's no other way to do it. Sierra Nevada Brewing Company, still family-owned, operated, and argued over. And be sure to stay tuned through the end of the show so you can play our monthly trivia game for a chance to win some cool prizes.
Hey there, this is Brittany Luce from NPR's It's Been a Minute. KQED's podcasts like The Bay, Bay Curious, Mind Shift, Right Nowish, and more all tell the stories of the Bay and beyond with reliable, human-centered journalism. They aim to inspire, make you think, entertain, and expand your understanding of the place you call home. Here's how you can support podcasting at KQED.
Showing your support is easy, and you can join Brittany in supporting KQED Podcast too at donate.kqed.org/podcast. That's donate.kqed.org/podcast.
Today, we're exploring a massive 426-acre campus near Stanford where scientists are conducting all sorts of cutting-edge research that has implications for astronomy, clean energy, medicine, and more. Our question asker, Eric Nelson, is along for the ride with KQED's Rachel Miro. She was an English major in college, so hopefully she can explain some of this to us in plain English.
Look, if you're like me, metaphors help to get a grip on complex scientific concepts. So before we get out of the tour van to visit SLAC, that's SLAC with a C, not with a CK like the Office app, I want to make a quick stop in the 19th century, just to help illustrate the basic concept behind a linear accelerator. Let's review a scientific first that happened in Palo Alto before Stanford was Stanford. Leland Stanford, the super-rich railroad baron, bred and raced horses on the land he later built the university on. In the 1870s, Stanford hired a guy named Edward Muybridge to photograph those horses to get a closer look at their strides. closer than strides had ever been observed before. Now, Muybridge had a scientific bent to his thinking, so after some annoyingly blurry snaps, he had an electric-powered battery of 12 cameras installed at Stanford's racetrack to catch a horse running past in a series of freeze frames.
Hey, I know the story. When Muybridge ran all those photographs together at high speed, he got what today we call a movie. He's the father of motion pictures.
Exactly. Now, imagine a much longer racetrack. And imagine not horses running past, but tiny, tiny subatomic particles. The building that houses this thing is almost 2 miles long, and the cameras, instead of recording sunlight bouncing off horses, use ultra-bright X-ray light to create freeze-frame movies of molecules. Also, when they move fast, they buzz a lot.
That is actually the sound of our accelerator operating.
That's Rachel Spurlock working on her PhD in chemical engineering at Stanford and our tour guide in the visitor alcove of SLAC's linear accelerator. This is what drivers on 280 pass over regularly, absolutely clueless, because from the outside, the linear accelerator building looks like a long, skinny, beige warehouse.
What are the pros and cons of having a linear accelerator versus a circular one?
Nowadays, I think it would be very rare to find a linear accelerator the way we have here at SLAC. Most are built circular, but we also have some accelerator research going on here at SLAC. One portion of our original 1960s accelerator is dedicated to research to shorten the length of accelerators.
When this was built in the 1960s, they needed a 2-mile-long building, so there's enough time and space to accelerate electrons to close to the speed of light. The building is so long, you can't see to the end of it from inside.
Our accelerator moves about 120 bunches of electrons per second.
They make a big noise for such small particles.
They do. A lot of people who come and visit think that the noise is actually the fluorescence, but it's the accelerator.
Inside the building that houses them, two long tubes stretch to what seems like infinity to the human eye. One large aluminum tube on the bottom and a smaller copper tube on top where the electrons are. What's moving the electrons along? More than 150 microwave generators called klystrons.
The exact same thing that you have in your kitchen at home in your microwave, except about 60,000 times stronger.
You could bake a potato in one of these klystrons in a millisecond, which impressed our question asker, Eric.
I want to come down here to fix my TV dinner tonight. A lot faster.
The whole shebang is surrounded by a lot of yellow caution tape and bright plastic orange delineators to keep people from touching things they're not supposed to touch. But how did this thing get here? Well, let's go back to the end of World War II. During World War II, physicists working in Los Alamos, New Mexico, developed the atom bomb. After the war, Stanford physicists wanted to get a better look inside the atom. But just like Muybridge, they needed a specialized, cutting-edge contraption to do it. So they pitched the idea of a linear accelerator to the Atomic Energy Commission to explore the basic building blocks of the universe, as explained here in a 1964 documentary called The Worlds Within.
What the nation is investing in this accelerator and the contribution which Stanford is making in terms of its lands are used to buy knowledge and fundamental understanding of nature.
Over the following years, SLAC won 3 Nobel Prizes for its early research, including the discovery of 2 fundamental particles, proving protons are made of quarks, and showing how DNA directs protein manufacturing in cells.
Not too shabby. But of course, science has moved on from these first basic lines of inquiry, right?
Yes. Now, as then, Slack functions like a cutting-edge research hackerspace. So anybody can propose a project, and if receiving the thumbs up from a research committee, do their experiment at one of the facilities, which are constantly being upgraded and modernized to allow for scientists to stay on the cutting edge of research.
So we no longer use our linear accelerator for those particle physics experiments that I mentioned that were kind of the foundation of SLAC when it was first conceived and developed.
In fact, if you were flying over the campus, you'd see what looks like a clutch of big warehouses, nondescript on the outside, chock full of scientific labs on the inside, wires, tubes, cylinders, tanks, and such.
If your proposal is accepted, you can come and use our facilities absolutely for free, as long as you publish your results. If you don't want to publish your results, it can get very expensive.
Would those mostly be, I guess, private corporations that are hoping to profit from the results of their research?
Exactly.
What kind of research happens at SLAC today?
So many kinds. And not just using the linear accelerators.
Yes, plural.
SLAC is home to a campus full of different lab spaces doing different things, using X-rays, lasers, and electron beams for groundbreaking experiments.
Like what? Is there anything concrete a regular person like me would understand?
Well, here's another metaphor. You know the MRI machine doctors use to get a 3D picture of your organs and tissues?
Yeah.
Now imagine that X-ray light I mentioned earlier, the X-ray light that particles speeding through a linear accelerator throw off to look at your insides at the molecular level.
With X-ray light, we're able to look at atoms. So we're looking at microscopic details of what matter is doing.
Matthias Kling is director of science research and development at the LINAC Coherent Light Source at SLAC. Scientists are trying to find ways to make the equipment smaller, cheaper, and capable of operating at room temperature, so that one day the equivalent of an MRI machine could be available to many more people, at their doctor's offices, among other places.
We're striving to stay at that frontier, so that's why we're constantly thinking about, okay, what is it that would enable us to answer the next big question?
Watching chemical reactions as they happen at the molecular level could lead to groundbreaking insights in a variety of fields, from computing to pharmaceuticals to aerospace to clean energy. When Matthias was done with his part of the tour, I turned to our question asker, Eric, whose eyes were spinning as fast as mine.
Any questions?
I'm just blown away. The people who founded this originally, if they had a vision of where they would be now, if you could like put them in a time machine and like, here you are, did you have any concept as to what this little tube you built, what impact it would be having on the world? That blows me away.
And now to a camera big enough to capture the night sky. We took a van over to a hangar where SLAC LSST camera deputy project manager Travis Lang stood with us in front of a brightly lit clean room, home to
the world's largest digital camera, 3.2 gigapixels, considerably larger than your iPhone camera. It is going to be mounted on a mountaintop in northern Chile, and we are using it to do a survey of the sky.
It's not just that this thing is massive, the size of a 3-ton car, with a lens bigger than 5 feet in diameter, or that it can capture a huge swath of sky with every photograph.
It will take images, and within 60 seconds of a shutter closing, it will do a bunch of analysis. It will do comparisons to previous images that it has, and it will detect that there's things that are different.
What's the point of a camera this big, one that costs $200 million to construct?
In a very large image, there's going to be thousands and thousands of things. So even every single image, you're going to get a lot of things that are different from the previous time. So there are some things in cosmology that happen very slowly, most things actually, right? The universe is a very slow-moving thing, but there are some things that occur very fast. So things like supernovas or asteroids that are coming through our solar system. So those kind of things, those very transient events, are very hard to detect.
This camera can detect them, and then scientists can direct astronomers working with bigger, more powerful telescopes to point them at the thing that is happening.
And get a really in-depth image in real time.
Rachel, this is mind-blowing.
But wait, there's more. You might be wondering at this point whether anything SLAC researchers are working on could be ready for the rest of us to use in the near future.
Yes, yeah, I am.
Well, that's where Johanna Nelson-Wecker comes in. She's a lead scientist at the SLAC Stanford Battery Center. She and her colleagues are researching cleaner, greener forms of energy storage.
One of the goals of making a battery for not a vehicle, but for putting it onto the grid, is for it to be longer duration than a standard lithium-ion battery. If you want to store energy for more than 8 hours, lithium-ion battery technology is not good. It's way too expensive, and it doesn't last.
Scientists in Wecker's lab are also trying to make things inexpensive, sustainable, and free of elements that lead to child labor and strip mining.
So we're looking at things that are much cheaper. Can we make a battery out of rust, for example, iron oxygen battery, things that are, you know, ridiculously cheap that you can bring the cost of energy storage down.
Does that make the batteries then more sustainable, more easily disposed of, et cetera, et cetera?
Not necessarily, but that's also a goal we have.
Rachel, this all does sound super cool, but I'm starting to get overwhelmed. Did our question asker, Eric, understand this stuff?
Absolutely. In fact, if you need a recap later, I'm sure I'd be able to help you out. No problem at all.
I hope I haven't scared you all off, because this really is an awesome tour, and there are 2 to 4 of them a month available to the public. But they're capped at 30 people a time, and I'm told they fill up pretty quick. Can't recommend it highly enough.
KQED's Rachel Miro, thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Big thanks to Eric Nelson for asking this week's question. If you are enjoying Bay Curious, could you do me a favor? Head to Bay Curious in the listening app of your choice. Make sure you are subscribed and make sure you turn on your auto downloads. That way, you're automatically getting every episode as soon as it comes out. And while you're there, it would be so nice if you could leave a rating and review for the show. You can do that on Apple Podcasts and on Spotify. Let us know what you're enjoying about the show so we can bring you even more of it. Those reviews are so much appreciated. Thanks to everyone who has already left a review. I know it only takes a minute, but that minute does mean a lot to us. Thank you. Bay Curious is made in San Francisco at member-supported KQED. Our show is produced by Katrina Schwartz, Christopher Beal, Brendan Willard, and me, Olivia Allen Price. Additional support from Jen Chien, Katie Springer, Cesar Saldana, Maha Sanad, Carly Severn, Bianca Taylor, Holly Kernan, and the whole KQED family. Have a great week.
Hi, Bay Curious listeners. Are you ready to play May's trivia game? Every month, we read a question here at the end of our episode. You can give us your answers over at our website, kqed.org/baycurious, or just click the link in the episode description. Out of the correct answers, we'll randomly choose one lucky winner to receive a cool prize package with Bay Curious swag and Sierra Nevada goodies. Okay, our question for the month is, the world's longest-running pillow-fighting contest was held from 1966 to 2006 in what Bay Area town? Our trivia quiz is made possible by Sierra Nevada Brewing Company. Good luck!
Hey, it's Glenn Washington from Snap Judgment. And if you love what you're hearing, and I know you love what you're hearing, please consider becoming a KQED member. Get special access to cool events, behind-the-scenes footage, and so much more. Plus, you'll sleep better at night knowing you did your part for the community you depend upon. It's in you. Please be in it. Visit donate.kqed.org/podcasts to sign up now. That's podcast with an S. Thanks.